This is Ashley Bond, Miss Illinois USA 2009 and a member of the Chicago Lovables. And you're listening to Fred and Mark on the Chicago Bullseye.
What's going on? This is Joakim Noah of the Chicago Bulls, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
I'm not here to win on this week, but you may be, but I'm not.
You're hungry?
Hey, Ma, bring us some meatloaf.
That's insane. You're insane. Absolutely insane.
My house
isn't even a stained spread. As we said.
Are you?
I don't know what we're yelling about!
Now, if you don't think this is the greatest, I will fight you. That's no lie.
Can you clap for the killers?
All right, let's rock.
Give it up for them gangsters.
Throw them off the
back. One time for the killers.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Double up for them gangsters.
Just live in the dream.
Hi, I'm Bill Wayne, and welcome to Chicago Bulldog.
I gotta be honest, I come in, it's like...
All right, Jason Pat on the line with on the Chicago Bullseye. Jason, thanks a lot for joining us. Really appreciate you taking time to join the Bullseye and discuss some beloved Bulls and NBA in general. You know, before we get started with the questions, I'd like to hear a little bit about you, if you don't mind providing us a little bit of your background, how you got started in the business of writing, and where you're from originally.
Yeah, so I grew up in Elmhurst, Illinois, western suburb of Chicago. Started watching the Bulls, and I was like, I think my first Bulls memory was basically John Paxson three-pointer in the 1993 NBA Finals. So my dad was a big Bulls fan, so I started watching some of him. Grew up, obviously, a big Bulls fan, so I saw some of the three-peat stuff. I wasn't old enough to really appreciate it, but I still became a huge Bulls fan, watched them through the terrible years in the post-Jordan era, so that was always fun, but... Yeah, but a big Bulls fan. I went to University of Illinois in Champaign. I didn't really go there to, like, with the writing and stuff. I didn't really go there for, like, journalism or anything. I kind of just started blogging about basketball and just other sports in general after I got out of college because I wasn't totally sure what I wanted to do with my life. And then I just kind of been with SB Nation for a few years, joined Bloggable a couple years ago, so do some blogging about the Bulls with them. And then just became managing editor of Today's Fast Break, a basketball site, covers NBA, covers WNBA, covers NBA draft stuff. So I've been doing that for like the last year or so, and it's been pretty cool.
We're going to get into some questions now with the beloved Bull in the current disaster, which is the team. I'll stay away from the Gasol because I know anybody who follows you on Twitter follows me. We're probably at different ends there. So we'll get into Gasol at the end. But
Luckily,
like to get
Gasol's
your
going
to
be gone, so you can listen to our show now. It's going to be okay. Gasol's in territory.
Yeah, all you Gasol haters, he's gone. So you can come back to the podcast. Hopefully, this will be the invite back. Maybe you could tweet everybody, hey, they're going to stop talking about Gasol now, and then maybe they'll come back. Top three reasons that you got, Jason, for the delta on the eight games, right, from Tibbs' 50 wins to the 42 this year. What are your top three reasons for why this team, failed so miserably?
Well, I think one thing was just the offense. They just never really figured it out because even a lot of the problems with the offense with Tibbs the last few years, people complained about it being too bland. And we saw, like, in the Cleveland series, it was a lot of, like, ISOs and all that kind of junk. And it was, like, all right, we thought Fred would come in, establish an offense that could take to the next level with all the movement, the little three-pointers and stuff like that. And the offense was terrible all season. And there were a bunch of different factors for that. I mean, Derek started terribly. His shooting was awful with a broken face. That didn't help. Jimmy never fully bought in. And some of the younger guys never stepped up like they would. So the offense, in general, I think it ranked, like, in the bottom third of the league, like, all year. So they dropped a ton of spots there, so that was obviously a big problem. I guess you go to the other side of the floor, and the defense was terrible. The defense wasn't really terrible the whole year. It started all right. But then as the year went on and kind of playing into it, the injuries, you don't want to use the injuries as a total excuse, but the Jimmy Butler injury was huge, and I think the Jimmy Butler injury was another huge reason both for the offense and the defense struggling at that one point in the middle of the year when they really kind of hit that huge lull. The defense just kind of fell off the face of the earth. Because Derek was terrible defensively. Powell, you don't want to hate me on Powell. Powell was hurt. And I think as the year went on, his effectiveness just kind of went down the drain. He was battling some injuries as well. And then I think just it seemed like the chemistry was a big problem. Just right from the start, we kind of saw some of those issues at the end of last year. And there was the whole thing about like the Rose-Butler beef. But some of the stuff we're hearing now, as it's come out at the end of this year, there were some issues with Joakim Noah, and him getting hurt didn't help either. But there were some issues with Noah, there were issues with Butler, and it seems like Fred just wasn't able to grasp the locker room like we hoped he would be able to. He was never really able to get through to all his guys. Obviously, I mentioned the thing with Butler. So, it's hard to pinpoint three reasons, but the offense being a disaster was one. Injuries were another, and I think just the whole chemistry of the team was, and just the makeup of the team was not where it needed to be.
I agree with you 100% with your reasons for the delta. The only thing that I would add to it personally is just the difference in the East. I mean, the East was a lot better this year than it was in the past. We were 2 games over .500, and we didn't make the playoffs. I'm trying to look right now and see what the break was last year. And it's not ranking it on the site that I'm on right now. So I'm not sure what it took in the East to make the playoffs last year, but I believe that a 500 record would have gotten you in last year. So
I think under 500 teams. Yeah, I think under 500, a couple 500 teams, I think, might have.
Exactly. I think Milwaukee was under 500, correct me if I'm wrong. They were 40-42.
They were right at
500. They were the eighth seed. They were the eighth seed. They were 41-41.
Okay, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so that's a good point, Mark, too. But so you would factor, it sounds like, to review, Jason, number one, in your opinion, was it the injuries? Or what do you think the number one reason was?
I hate blaming the injuries. It definitely was a big part. I mean, because I think the record with Jimmy, I think, was 5 or 6 games over .500. And they still weren't that good. They're still not that good. Obviously, that's still more like a playoff team. It still wouldn't have been good enough to probably win a championship. Obviously, that we even with Jimmy, they had plenty of problems. But, I mean, the injuries did play a factor. As much as I hate to use those things as an excuse, Jimmy missing all that time, Nico missed a bunch of those games, Powell was hurting, obviously Noah was hurt for a good second half of the year, and I think that hurt the defense a lot. So they definitely did play a part, but it wasn't – I think that'd be maybe the reason why they – got so much worse, but I wouldn't blame injuries for them like not being like some dominant team that was like an actual title contender.
Yeah, I would agree there, but I still feel like there's this tendency as Chicago Bulls fans not to blame it on injuries. They were 22-12 on January 9th. All the injuries occurred after that date for the most part, with the exception of Dunleavy. It's like, we just gonna ignore that fact? That's when Noah goes out, he's our best defender. I don't think it's any coincidence that the defense goes to hell when Noah and Butler go out, and that's exactly, you know, when it happens. So I understand there's a reluctance to kind of like point in on injuries. I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, Tibbs had some success with dealing through injuries, but no one, there's not a coach that faced the amount of injuries in a short period of time, even Tibbs. In the year when Noah was an MVP, when basically Rose was out that whole year, Taj played 82 games, Dunleavy played 82 games, Noah played 80. It's like we had great health outside of Rose. So, I don't know. I just felt like he was really dealt a poor hand there with the injuries. And so it sounds like that you kind of bought on to us and you agree that injuries were probably number one.
Yeah, like I said, probably number one for why they were just so bad. But like I said, I still, even when they were winning games early in the year, I was still not totally bought into them. So I think if they would have stayed more healthy, they definitely probably would have made the playoffs. Even after they were kind of healthy, the way they ended the season when they were mostly healthy, obviously they didn't have Noah in the second half of the year, but when they went through that stretch with, was it the Magic game, the two Knicks games?
The Grizzlies.
They had most of the guys there.
Absolutely.
Grizzlies games, like, they had most of the guys there for those games. Besides Noah, Butler was not totally healthy, but still, like, and that, I think that was just really disappointing. They still, even with the injuries, they still had opportunities with a mostly healthy team to still kind of get into the playoffs. Like, I kind of checked out towards the end of the year anyways, just because I wasn't enjoying watching them, but they still had a chance right there. And when you blow those games against teams like that and just look terrible doing it, that's why I guess I can't totally blame the injuries, but they definitely did play a huge part.
I agree with you. I mean, it's tough to blame injuries when we had a healthy team at the end of the year, and it didn't look like we may have been healthy because Jimmy was playing like kind of on and off, but then the minute that Derek wasn't playing, Jimmy was playing great again. So to me, it looked like the number one reason could very well just be chemistry issues, because Jimmy and Derek never really played well together. even when they were both healthy, we seemed to be better when one of them was not playing and the other one was playing. The team in general did not seem to buy into Hoiberg's system, in my opinion. It starts at the top for me. The team just together did not have chemistry.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that goes to everybody. I think Fred deserves blame for this year for not getting the ice guy to buy in. But going forward, I mean, Jimmy's got to do a better job buying in as well, because they even talked about, I think, KC or somebody reported at the beginning of the year that Fred was trying to insert some stuff that Tibbs was running, some more isolation-based stuff for Jimmy. And obviously there's always been the talk about Rhodes and Butler struggling to play together. And it is kind of an awkward fit in general, because when you have two ball-dominant guards that like to handle the ball a lot, but then they also can't really shoot threes, I think that's just an awkward fit in general. So I'm not totally giving up on Fred or the offense working or Jimmy and Rose working. I'm not giving up on that yet, but I think we definitely saw the problems with it this year, and we hope that they'll work on it together and Jimmy will do a better job buying in, maybe pushing the pace a little more and doing less of the isolation stuff. But I'm not totally confident that it's going to work, but I'm not going to say that it's definitely not, at least.
Yeah, I think you touched on a big problem, that Jimmy went the backcourt shooting. Jimmy went from a good three-point shooter to average to good the year before at 37% to, you know, basically 30. That's a huge, huge drop. I mean, he went from good to bad in like 1 year, and I think that really affected the team, as an aside. On to what do you do next, Jerry? So I buy the team. I hire you as GM. Hire Mark to replace Benny. We're cooking with gas. Things are going well. We're cooking with gas. What's the first thing you do about Noah? What do you do about Rose? And what do you do about Butler? Do you bring all three back? Do you let Noah go? I'd like to hear, in your order of preference, what do we do?
Okay, so I'll start with the best player. I'll start with Jimmy. I know there's been some rumors about looking to move him. And when people first kind of started talking about it in the middle of the year, I was not about it. I thought that was laughable. Right now, just after the disaster of the season, I would absolutely look into it. Like, I mean, if the Celtics come to the table, that high draft pick, and they want to give that high draft pick, they want to give it another good player. So I would be fine trading Jimmy if they find the right deal. I feel like if you're going to trade Jimmy, you're probably going to trend towards more of a rebuilding process. Like I said, I don't want to just, like, trade him for scraps, because I know there's the slander Jimmy campaign's been kind of out in some of the media, you know, packs to kind of call them out. I think some of it's deserving. He obviously kind of got a big head. I talked about some of the stuff with Fred. I think I would lean towards keeping Jimmy, but if the right deal is on the table, I would be perfectly fine maybe going towards a rebuild and trading him. As for if we're going to look at Derrick Rose, I would be much more open to trading him. I don't think he's like done as an effective player. I think it'd still be better. He showed some signs the second half of the year of being better. But overall, he still was not very good. His defense was absolutely atrocious the second half of the year. And the offense, he's still kind of just a volume scorer. His overall, like, assisting wasn't that great. And he's making $20 million. Free agency is coming up. So I think it's the time where you look to trade him. And if you can find a deal, I don't think you're going to get that much for him. If you can find a deal and get his money off the books, maybe use that extra money to spend, I would strongly consider doing that, and that gives Jimmy more of an opportunity to, I guess, be the primary ball handler. If you can add some of the pieces around him, I would be totally fine doing that. I'm just worried about looking forward with Derek. Like, if he comes back and he has another decent year like this one, maybe a little better, but he's still not that great. Like, are you going to pay him in 2017? How much are you going to pay him? Like, I don't know. I still wouldn't be that confident in giving him a huge long term deal. So that's why I think it might just be best for both sides to go separate ways. If you can't find a deal, I'm not going to say, like, cut him or anything like that. But with Rose, I would have stronger feelings about possibly moving on from him, as painful as it is to say, because I did used to love Rose, and he's obviously an MVP, and it'd be tough to see him go. But for the better of the team, I would at least look into that. With Noah, it's all really tough just because he is obviously such an important part of their defense as a rim protector, as a rebounder. But his offense has taken just such a dive the last couple of years. Besides, he can still do the passing and stuff, but he can't finish around the basket. He's getting up there in age. Some team's going to pay him a lot of money. I would try to bring him back for a hometown discount. Ultimately, I don't think he's going to do it, so I think he's going to move on.
I agree with all three of those. I do. Would you trade Jimmy straight up for Blake Griffin?
That's, I don't know. I mean, Blake Griffin, both guys healthy. Blake Griffin's a better player. They're the same age. Blake is about to become a free agent in a year, so I'd be worried about him. I'd be worried about him leaving soon. So I don't know. That would go. And I'm just not sure if trading Jimmy for Blake would really do that much for the Bulls. I don't know if it would really change that much. Like I said, Blake's probably a better player, but I mean, ultimately, I think I probably would do it just with Blake. I'm just not sure it would really help them that much. I don't know. It's tough.
Your comments overall on Fred, do you feel this guy should have been fired? Do you feel like he's given another chance? I mean, obviously he didn't do a great job. I'm not sure how you felt about the hiring in the first place, but I'd like to get your overall take on Fred Hoiberg, and do you feel like he's salvageable?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of Bulls fans are out there, like, especially on Bloggable. I go through the comments all the time, and they're just merciless towards Fred. I mean, he did not do a good job this year. I think he kind of, I don't know if he underestimated or if Gar, Pax, they undersold just some of how big some of the problems were in the team, in the locker room. Seems like he didn't do a great job from the start of, like I mentioned, this getting guys to buy in. It seems like benching Joakim Noah really backfired on him. But I'm not, I mean, it was his first NBA head coaching job. He was kind of put into a tough situation with this locker room and with all these different personalities in there. So while he did not do a good job of getting them to buy in, I'm not going to leave the players blameless either. So I'm not going to sit here and say that Fred deserves to be fired after one really disappointing season. Like I said, he did sign a 5-year contract. It's unrealistic to fire him to begin with as well, firing a guy 1 year into a 5-year deal. So I'm perfectly fine giving Fred another season. Hopefully they make some roster changes that maybe are better suited for the style of play that he wants. Hopefully he works with Jimmy and whoever else is around moving forward, but really getting the buy-in of that system. And hopefully he shows some significant improvement next year. If he doesn't do a good job next year and there's not significant improvement, then I'd be fine firing him after 2 years. I think firing after 1 year would be a rash decision.
So, guys, so it sounds like you're okay, though, with the fact that we hired a coach that had no experience. Like, we're giving him this kind of rookie job where he's allowed to make mistakes and really screw things up.
Why do you say he had no
experience?
Mark, he was a successful college coach. He was a front office executive, and he played in the NBA. It's not like we hired Tim Floyd.
I think it's very close to hiring Tim Floyd. There's been very few college coaches that have automatically
it's
worked
nothing
in the NBA.
Like hiring Tim Floyd.
We were a team that was regarded as a top team in the East, and we brought in a coach that had no experience, and we let him experiment with this team that we thought was built for a title run. And I'm not okay with that. And I think everyone's kind of getting a freebie because of Brad Stevens and the fact that he's worked out. But for every Brad Stevens, there's been 15 guys that haven't worked out. There's been very few guys that have come in straight from college and worked out. Why should we have been the testing ground for Fred Hoiberg?
He was eminently more qualified than Tim Floyd. There's zero comparison to that. As I said, he played in the NBA. He was a successful, very successful coach at the collegiate level, and he was an executive in the NBA. I mean, there's no comparison to that. I don't get it. I mean, what's your take, Jason?
Well, when he was hired, I mean, it kind of was obvious that he was going to be hired. I think maybe that's one of the bigger issues, is that it was just so blatantly obvious that he was going to get hired that there wasn't, like, an actual coaching search. At least it didn't seem like that. Like, once, like, Iowa State got eliminated, and once the writing was on the wall with Tibbs, everyone knew that he was going to get fired as long as, even if the Bulls went farther last year, he might have still been fired. Was that relationship with the front office was unsalvageable. It just seemed like everybody knew Fred was going to get hired. There was really no other interviews or any other thing, Just basically no coaching search. So I think maybe in hindsight, that might have been a bit of a problem. And bringing a rookie NBA head coach into this locker room, I think, like I said, in hindsight, it does look like it was a bit of a problem. Hindsight is 2020. It's easy to say that now. But I think I would have wished at least there was more of a coaching search and not basically just, all right, we're bringing Fred in because he's friends with Gar, and they've had a relationship together. So, it is tough, like I said, because I had some hopes for Hoiberg with his offense, with this team at the beginning of the year. I mean, maybe that was just me really talking myself into it.